Hello, and welcome back to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff. Today we're going to talk more about how to keep yourself as healthy as possible even before you go to the doctor and alongside what your doctor is recommending. Because part of health is eating, and how we eat and what we eat can have a very large influence on our health, our weight, and our well-being. 15 years ago, a group of families assembled to talk about von Hippel-Lindau disease. Now, if you don't know much about von Hippel-Lindau disease, we didn't know very much either, and we were affected by it. So we tried to learn what we could about the disease from our doctors and wherever else we could find help. And one of the very big questions that came up right at the beginning was, what can we eat? What can we do? Exercise or breathing or eating, what can we do to try to improve the course of the disease? And we're still wrestling with that question, but in this hour we're going to talk about some of the things that all of us can do to improve our health through what we eat. We will get some insights from David Sandoval, the founder of Purium Health Products in Long Beach, California. David has made a lifelong study of nutrition to enhance his own health and that of various family members, and has put together what he calls the battle plans for how to deal with a number of the more prevalent diseases. So in this hour, we're going to talk a little bit about lupus, about attention deficit disorder, about celiac disease and other allergies, and a little bit about dementia and how nutrition can influence the course of these diseases. Stay with us, and we will be right back to speak with David Sandoval. The Powerful Patient is brought to you as a public service by the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance. We work with people who are dealing with complex medical conditions or who may be struggling to get a diagnosis. We help you learn how to manage your health, form a partnership with your healthcare providers, and manage your healthcare team. Read about us on our website at powerfulpatient.org. We welcome your questions, either by email or by telephone, at 1-800-767-4845, extension 6. Please record your question and we may use it on the air. Thank you. I have with me today David Sandoval. And David, could you please give us a little background on your expertise with nutrition?
Well, I have to say I am self-taught to a certain extent, but you're never self-taught. You're taught by others. You just that's how you describe an informal education. If you look at my formal education, I don't think that you would have much to be impressed with. I at an early age found myself taking care of myself, which didn't leave a focus on academics, although I believe in academics. I just wasn't able to exercise much time in that arena. So the bottom line is that I took an interest, a very young interest, in holistic healing. I, looked at Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, shamanic medicine, which led me to study Amazonian healing arts and Swiss herbs, as well as some of the, I guess to put it in a synopsis, I believe I've studied most of the ancient healing arts that are available through 11 cultures around the world. And I've tried to integrate that knowledge into a single discipline so that people could come to a source for knowledge that doesn't have to be prejudiced by someone's teaching from school, which is maybe an advantage.
Right. Did you study that all here, or did you do the travel that seems to imply?
I traveled fairly extensively. I've already filled a couple and a half of passports, which is quite a bit. I've been across China and studied and went to see different things in different places for sure. But a lot of knowledge, thank goodness, today is available at a fingertip, thanks to the information age. And it's becoming easier and easier to integrate this knowledge.
Right, the internet's a wonderful thing. We deal a lot with people with mysterious medical conditions that have no quick path to fix, and there's always a concern that there's probably an element of nutrition here that we don't understand, and we get such confusing messages about nutrition. Yeah, where's the best place to start in trying to eat right?
Yeah, don't think of it as nutrition. To me, that's just absolutely ridiculous. If we stopped eating, we would die, correct?
Right.
Okay, so it's not nutrition, it's food.
Okay.
and what we eat is what is, to a great extent, dictates what our body is capable of. This is obvious. If we eat a lot of calories, then we're capable of running a marathon, and if we don't, we're not. If we drink a lot of water, we're capable of walking, you know, and exercising and sweating, and if we don't, we're not. These are really basic concepts, and so what I have found is that the human body does have a certain innate intelligence that is not yet understood by science. And I also know that there are certain things, when science does not understand something, that's when it is oftentimes best to revert to nature. If you take photosynthesis as a very quick example, scientists cannot explain how photosynthesis works. Well, they may be able to explain it in a layman's terms, but nobody really can explain it, from a chemical standpoint. And
right.
Yet without it, there would be no life on Earth. If you just stop and think about that there would be no life on Earth without photosynthesis, yet scientists have failed to unravel its mystery yet.
So this is the way that plants take light and turn it into nutrients.
They charge nutrients so they're available to the animals that eat them, ionically. They also release ozone, which rises up in the atmosphere and protects us from ultraviolet light, and they release oxygen, which feeds us, and they convert moisture, transmutate moisture and sunlight, and create this glucose protein carbohydrate combination in plants. It's like a miracle. It's like the most amazing factory of energy transmutating light, yet scientists don't understand it. Without it, there would be no life on Earth. So when you talk to people who have diseases that scientists don't understand, let's not panic.
Right, right.
Just because scientists don't understand photosynthesis, the world did not stop.
This is true. This is true. And, well, and like von Hippel-Lindau disease that I work with, they discovered the gene in 1993, and they said, aha, this is the first step toward a cure. It's 15 years later. We're only a few baby steps farther along
with
the
steps
path
like
to
that.
A cure. So, yeah, and meanwhile, we have a lot of people dealing with a lot of health issues that need some help along the way, and they want to help themselves to the maximum extent. So I see you've done a lot with ADD and with lupus in particular. Can you tell us first, what is ADD?
I would love to do that, but could we not get past the cancer so quickly? I wanted to...
Go ahead.
You see, one of the things that has made me suddenly credible is that for years and years and years, I told people that there was a food component to disease,
mm-hmm.
particularly cancer. And I was told by the scientists who disavowed me that it was genetic. In other words, all cancer was genetic. Well, the Human Genome Project proved that only about 19% of all cancers are actually, you know, caused by genes, and the rest are caused by the environment. Now, you deal with those that are actually genetically triggered, correct?
But there's an interplay. I mean, yes, you're right.
But that's okay.
The particular condition that I deal with is caused by an aberration in a gene that's in the germline. You were born with it. But all cancers, if you look inside the tumor, there's some breakdown of some of the genes in there. But
They're definitely linked to a breakdown in cellular DNA, but not triggered by a predisposition.
Right.
And that's the difference I wanted to make. Well, the thing is that regardless of the root cause, there's two things in play. One, a disease is an opportunist. A genetic disease is an opportunist. It may be that people who have a genetic predisposition to something do not get it. There are women whose mothers have passed down the breast cancer gene who don't get breast cancer, etc. Okay?
Right. Yes.
And so what we have found, and what Dr. Betty Kamen and I, Health Science Institute and other people, we've found that you can interrupt heredity. In other words, you can, to a certain extent, you're in the river, but you could direct what shore you end up at. You know what I mean?
Right.
So what we have found is that there are certain foods like that contain compounds like ellagic acid, pomegranates, for example.
Mm-hmm.
At the Hollings Cancer Research Institute, while beta drugs, the phase 2 drugs, only worked against around 50% of cancers, ellagic acid seemed to find a way to work against all cancers. And so if you take certain things that are food-based, sometimes they can do things that drugs simply can't. And so I just wanted to encourage people, and my last word on cancer is I want to encourage people to investigate some of these foods that we call superfoods that may be capable of helping their body, end up on the right shoreline. That's all.
Right, right. You can at least influence the odds
mm-hmm.
of how severe or when the cancer may occur.
Exactly.
Even if you can't prevent it altogether.
Correct. Now, right. ADD, to answer your question, I apologize for my
no
digression.
Problem.
ADD was once called hyperactivity, and the two are oftentimes confused. But ADD is, in my opinion, one of the most treatable from a food standpoint of any condition that that we're dealing with today. And the reason why is simply because there are there are interruptions in the brain's ability to function normally that to a great extent are caused by deficiencies.
How did you get involved in studying ADD?
Well, as a child, I, of course, was diagnosed as being hyperactive. I was given medications, which I refused to take. It turned out my brother took them to school and sold them at a tidy profit, but that was the 60s. And the bottom line is that that I had to learn to deal with this myself. I had to face up to the fact that, yes, there was, something that I needed to address. And most importantly, though, I was tired of being marginalized. I was tired of, people dismissing. I now own 7 companies. I do business, around the world. I make nutritional products for more than 400 companies. The forward to my most recent book was written by the who I believe is the most well-respected cancer doctor in America, Dr. Keith Block. And way back in 1993, the head of the National Cancer Institute said some very flattering things about me in some very prominent magazines. And so, for a kid who was like kicked out of a couple of schools and told that I was basically, never going to amount to anything because of this condition, I think I did all right. And the reason why is because I realized that it wasn't a drug that was going to help me, and it wasn't counseling that was going to help me. It was taking my brain and allowing it to function normally. And that was the most important thing. I didn't have any trouble learning. I had trouble in my brain with the balance of proteins and glucose and minerals and the basic compounds, oxygen, that are necessary to make my brain function, the neurotransmission between neuroreceptors and neurotransmitters. All of these things, they're different in people with ADD, and you have to be far more diligent about keeping the body supplied with the core elements that it needs to carry out those functions, because when those functions are interrupted, for the ADD person, clearly they have a different way of dealing with stress than others do.
Now, it just seems that ADD is in epidemic proportions. Is it just because it's being named more often, or is this something that is more prevalent because of something in the environment?
You're absolutely right. There's 3 different things. There's excitotoxins, which you're aware of. There's phytoestrogens, which we're aware of. And yet there's very little we could do about those things unless you're extremely diligent.
Would you define those for our listeners, though?
Sure. An excitotoxin is a chemical that is put into, let's say, agricultural products to stop bugs from eating a certain plant, and that chemical interrupts certain nerve transmissions within the bug, and then we get residue of those things, and so nerve transmissions in our bodies are disrupted. Excitotoxins are typically caused by things like phthalates, like plasticizers, things that make plastic soft. We put our children's lunches in plastic baggies. We wrap our food in saran wrap. We microwave things that have in plastic containers. We drink water out of plastic bottles that have sat in the sun and allowed the water, and then we recool them. There are chemicals in the dry cleaning materials. There are chemicals in your carpet. There are chemicals in the things that you wash the tub before you put your baby in the tub. All of those things mimic hormones and change the reaction that our body has, and that disrupts everything in the body. It's like if you have dominoes that are all supposed to fall, and you move a couple of the dominoes further apart or closer together or remove them all together, then things that are supposed to happen, series of chemical reactions that are supposed to happen, do not happen. And you wonder why the last domino didn't fall. Why didn't you remember this? Why didn't you act this way? Well, that last domino didn't fall. You didn't act, quote, normally, because you had an interruption in the chemical symbiosis.
Interesting. So we are being surrounded by a number of artificial hormones that are affecting our bodies in subtle ways. And the accumulation of this effect is really beginning to catch up with us. So again, the chemicals that surround us, the chemicals in the carpet, in the various cleaning products that we use, and in foods which have been engineered to keep the bugs down and therefore bring more produce to market with less spoilage, while it seems a great idea in that respect, the problem is that the same chemicals or the same processes that are used to interrupt the neurological responses in the bugs are influencing the neurological responses in us humans as we eat those little bits of residue. Please stay with us now, and we'll be right back to speak some more with David Sandoval after this message. Please go to powerfulpatient.org on the internet. You will find there the handout that goes with this show with more information about the people we've interviewed, the websites we've talked about, and other background information. And as always, we will appreciate your support for this show. Please donate to the Cancer Research Fund and bring us back another day. Stay with us now, and we'll be right back.
So all these plastics that we're surrounded with, there's at least a small influence of each one in the things we put in that container.
Yes, and then we have phytoestrogens like the soy and things like that that are prevalent. I tried to buy bread for my daughter that didn't have soy in it. I couldn't. My daughter's not going through menopause. Why does she need soy isoflavones in her life?
So what's the matter with soy? Soy is often touted as being a wonderful thing.
Oh, and it is if you're a woman going through menopause. But most of the world is not a woman going through menopause, yet soy is inflicted upon all of us. Do you know that Japanese women consume one-third of the soy that American women do? One-third of the soy that American women do.
That's incredible to me, because in Japan, of course, they eat a lot of tofu and other soy products, so our vision of that is that the Japanese eat a great deal more soy than we do.
But how much tofu do they really eat? They dice up a little bit in this and dice up a tiny bit in that. You know what I mean? And they have it, you know, two times a week.
But you're saying that it's included as an ingredient in more things than we realize.
Well, if you look, you try to buy a food without soy protein, without soybean oil, without soy flour, you try to buy a food without soy in it today, and you will be very hard-pressed. Huh. That's why people have food allergies. You try to find a food without gluten added to it. That's another reason why people have food allergies.
So we're constantly being aggravated by these additives.
We are, and so it's the milk and the soy that are probably the number one adjutants on that level, on the phytoestrogen level, because milk has so many hormone precursors in it. Because milk is meant to have a little baby calf grow up to be really big, because little baby calves don't fight. They can't protect themselves from predators. The way they protect themselves is to get big fast.
Yes, and phytoestrogen is from plant sources. This
Correct.
Is a hormone from plant sources, and we're putting it into our foods when we really don't need that additional estrogen. And is this one of the reasons that children are coming to puberty faster as well?
Yes, it's called precocious puberty, and I did a lot of work educating the public that a few months back, where we showed that girls as young as 5, 6, 7 were menstruating, developing breast tissue. And as a consequence, you die younger. I mean, you know what I mean? You flower younger, you die younger.
Wow.
This is the future we're giving to our children, and it's just not right.
So do these hormones also have an influence on fertility? Because it seems that male fertility is dropping in this country, too.
Okay, there has been, since they've been studying sperm counts in marriage-age men, which has been 56 years now, sperm counts have dropped 53%. That's almost 1% per year. This isn't hard to figure out that this is a tremendous, tremendous crisis. Now, if you add to that that sperm motility, the ability of sperm to swim forward quickly, mm-hmm. has been reduced by up to 60%. Think about that. Sperm count reduced 50%, motility reduced 60%. It's incredible that anybody gets pregnant anymore, but it is hydrogenated oil. See, sperm is over 50% fat, and the rest is protein. It's fat and protein almost primarily, and so sperm needs fat to wiggle. That's what makes its tail go woo 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 woo. And if the, well, little sound effects there, sorry. But
that's
the,
all right.
If the tail doesn't do that, if the tail gets stuck left or stuck right, then it swims in circles. And we all know what that does. So,
right.
Yeah, this is directly attributable to phytoestrogens and to, again, the hormone mimics and to hydrogenated oils.
Oh, my goodness. So getting back to ADD now, so we're having a lot more children with these problems. I mean, in the old days, they used to call it spilkas, or ants in your pants, or, you know,
yes.
hyperactivity, as you say. The kid won't sit in his chair and concentrate. But these
and
days,
it was
we
one
have
in a classroom,
so
right? Now,
yeah.
Now you're lucky to find one who isn't.
Correct. So why are we seeing so many more kids? It's because of the diet?
Thank you. This is one of those things that is directly attributable to the brain getting a lack of the chemicals that it needs to work with.
Hmm.
And this is, I mean, if you think about it, you know, the brain in the morning, it doesn't need just a load of sugar. It needs oxygen, it needs protein, and it needs fat, and it needs minerals in addition to glucose. But all we ever give it is glucose, and that sends things, you know, really off the chart. You give, let's say, a child a sugary breakfast cereal with milk. Well, the milk converts to sugar quickly, not to mention the sugar that's already in the cereal. And so what we've got to do is we've got to have, you know, something that is more, I know it sounds crazy, but let's say you gave your child a glass of fresh squeezed orange juice, which is loaded with minerals and some really good glucose, some good sugar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Make sure there's pulp in it, because if you have orange juice without pulp, it's really bad and causes diabetes. If you have orange juice with pulp, it's very good. So there's where you're going to get your minerals mm-hmm. and some glucose. Then you're going to have, let's say, a poached egg with some wheat toast. Let's just say, an ideal world, right?
Right.
So all of a sudden, there you've got the quality protein, right? You've got quality carbohydrates. So there you got your protein, your minerals, your glucose, and then if they walk to school or do anything, exercise in the morning, then they're going to pump oxygen up to their brain. And all of a sudden, you've got the perfect environment for learning. I mean, I did Health Talk Radio for 10 years in New York City, and a woman called me and she says, Dave, the teacher, you know, called and thanked me for putting my child on Ritalin. And I'm like, sweetie, I can't believe you did that. She goes, I didn't. I followed your ADD battle plan just to the letter. And after the third day, my child was like, the teacher was calling saying, he's so attentive in school. He's answering questions. He got an A on his test. What did you do to your child? And it happens that quickly, parents.
Wow.
I mean, it happens that quickly when you provide your kids. Now, I know that you, when you read the ADD battle plan, you are going to see a blueprint, literally a roadmap to reversing ADD, and it happens over and over and over.
Now, your ADD battle plan is available on your website. Where's your website?
You could go to the website. It is www.mypurium.com. That's MYPURIUM. Mypurium.com. Yeah, go to education, and under education, you'll see the battle plans. And we have, there is also, if you don't want to read it, you could listen. You could also go to recorded, what are called consumer education calls.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one on fighting cancer. There's one on ADD. In fact, there's one on just about every subject that you could imagine. And in those battle plans, what we do is we have culled through dozens of the most well-respected journals on natural healing. And we have gone through the information that they recommend in each condition, and we've made it, put it into easy and simple to read fashion. We talk about what exercises you should or shouldn't do. When we talk about lupus in 1 second, that's very important.
Yeah.
We talk about what foods you should and shouldn't eat. We talk about to look in your household, what things may be triggering it, and in your environment. And we also recommend a list of power foods that are known to help reverse that condition.
Now, I know young women who start out with the intention of they're going to feed their child nutritious food, and then at a certain point they give up and revert to macaroni and cheese and spaghetti and the things that the kids are asking for. What can you say to a mother who's in that pickle?
Well, I go through a process called cleaning out the cupboard, okay? And what I do is I go into obese people's homes with a camera and with trash cans, and we go into their household and we read every label. And if there is one of the following five things, that food must be thrown out. But we take that food and we put it on a list, and then we go to a store and we find the exact same thing that does not have those ingredients. So it's not the exact same thing. It is a reasonable facsimile, as the old people used to say.
Right.
It's the closest thing that you could get without being bad, okay? And then we retrain them to have, let's say if it is macaroni and cheese, well, maybe that macaroni and cheese is made with the whole grain pasta. Very important, because kids need whole grains. Maybe it's made with a cheese that isn't processed and pasteurized and homogenized, and that could be very important. Maybe the mom chooses to make it with goat's milk instead of cow's milk. You know, these things, I made macaroni and cheese with, I made a white sauce using goat's milk, and then I put in some raw gouda, and I used a whole grain pasta, and I put a nice piece of salmon on top of it, and everybody was like, ooh, this is so gourmet, you know, because I used some Rotelli pasta instead of just the regular. So, I mean, heck yes, we all live in the real world. Let's eat the foods that we love. Let's not try to, you know, change things so dramatically that people don't recognize the food we're feeding them. Mm-hmm. But let's look at, could I mention the five things we need to look for?
Sure, please.
Okay, first of all, you look for sugar stacking. No high fructose corn syrup, okay? Secondly, you look for monosodium glutamate, also known as natural flavoring and flavor enhancer. That can't be in there. Third, you need to look out for hydrogenated oils. You need to eliminate those hydrogenated oils. The fourth thing you need to do for children for ADD, if there are any artificial colorings go straight to the brain. They're the number one reason for ADD. No artificial colorings. And then lastly, as you know, and you know what I'm going to say, look out for those preservatives. Hemp preservatives are chemical additives that are very, very disruptive. They cause allergies. The most people are allergic to preservatives because every food we eat, so you may eat corn, then you eat potatoes, and then you eat peas, but every one of those was preserved with the same chemical. So it's like you ate the same food, and so your body goes, dang, you're eating that same food every single day, every five times a day. You're not eating the same food. You're eating chemicals, and your body rejects them and becomes allergic to them.
Yeah, allergies are another thing that seems to be epidemic these days. I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't know anybody who was allergic to peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are whole classrooms full of kids who are allergic to peanuts. One of my grandsons was in a class that was a no-peanut classroom because there was a kid who was very allergic to peanuts. And why is this?
Well, I can't explain the peanut conundrum other than peanuts have pervaded society. This is what happens is gluten intolerance, as you know, celiac disease is skyrocketing, right?
Right.
Well, this is because we now have gluten in everything. It's like soy. We have more soy, gluten, and corn allergies, and so we have set our body up to be hypersensitive to food.
So if there are subtle little bits of this in various foods, it just sort of keeps nudging us to the point where our systems just rebel against it?
Something like that. Let's say that your body has a trigger point, and your body says, I could tolerate 5 parts of this in my blood, but I can't tolerate 6. So the minute you exceed 6, then I'm going to cause a reaction called a histamine reaction. The histamine reaction is where your body throws out these little stick-looking things, and they surround whatever the allergen is so that it doesn't affect your body. Well, once you've got this little allergen in your blood, but it's surrounded by this army of things trying to keep it from, it's like a politician surrounded by bodyguards, right? And so all of a sudden, it's hard for that. The politician alone could move through a crowd, but once he's surrounded by bodyguards, they're clogging everything up. That's your blood. Once
okay.
Did that describe it?
Yeah. So we're mostly used to histamine reactions in terms of sneezing for, some pollen allergy. So the pollen irritates us. Our bodies surround it, try to get rid of it. That
Correct.
Makes your nose run.
Yes.
And then you're blowing your nose all day. So we take this antihistamine drug
Correct.
To try to tell the histamine reaction to cool it. But the pollen's still floating around in our bodies.
And we
bodies,
haven't done
right?
anything to reduce the pollen, but if we just had some good superfoods, let's say wheatgrass juice, barley grass juice, we had ate a bunch of cilantro or maybe had a couple of really big green salads with deep, dark green lettuce, and that's going to, purge those allergens from our blood and keep them below that trigger point to where, yeah, the allergens may be around us, they may be they may even be in our blood, but they are not going to cause a trigger because our diet constantly reduces them, eliminates them, captures them, so we don't have to have the histamine reaction.
So the real trick is not to just stop the symptoms, but to stop the problem at the source. And there are foods that can help bolster our natural defenses against allergens. Stay with us now. We're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back to talk with David Sandoval about ADD and about lupus.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
So all these new sugar foods, and I saw breakfast cereals now with the names of candy bars on the front. We're putting more and more sugar in it to try to make them more attractive to kids, but in fact this is absolute poison for our children.
Here's the problem. High fructose corn syrup costs, now get this, 0.005 cents a pound. Have you gone out and bought a pound of raw, organic, unwashed sugar lately?
Well, it's a whole bunch more than that.
It's
a couple of dollars worth.
Correct. Now, if you're going to put 25 grams of sugar, and you know that they do, into something, How much is that going to cost you if it's high fructose corn syrup? A penny?
Yeah, not even.
Yeah, but if you versus 20 cents?
Right.
No way, Jose. Now, your body knows what to do with sugar because we sugar's in everything. It's in fruit. It's in vegetables. It's in, you know what I mean? Sugar's mm-hmm. in stuff. And so our body knows what to do with that. But when you start reducing the sugar, making it a fake sugar, then it just totally disrupts the body's system, especially the insulin response system, and that's where we get into trouble with diabetes and obesity, hyperactivity, acne, candida. It's all linked to that. So, yeah, we've got to really look out for the stacking of sugars.
How did we wind up in this pickle where the
money.
The food is has just been warped out of all relationship to what it was 100 years ago?
Okay, here's the thing. Let's say that you and I, we both sell apples, right? We both have an apple orchard, and we're mm-hmm. going to the local store saying, would you like to buy our apples? And I've got the store buying my apples, and you want the store to buy your apples. And so you go and you say, hey, you know what? You're buying Dave's apples, but Dave's apples, they go rotten after 10 days. My apples won't go rotten for 30 days, which means you don't have to throw half of them away. And he says, okay, well, I'm going to stop buying Dave's apples, and I'm going to buy your apples. Well, you know how he accomplished that? He irradiated his apples, so there's no longer bacteria or enzymes in his apples. And so those apples, excuse me, they don't rot.
Right.
Because they don't decompose. They don't oxidize.
Right.
And so it's all about money. And if I tell you that I could put a preservative into something and it will last longer, if I could grow a food with a chemical and it will grow faster and you don't actually have to take the time to care for your soil, which might cost a couple extra pennies, every person who saves a penny makes $1 million. Because if you save a penny on something that you sell 100 million of, that's $1 million.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. Pennies, fractions of pennies, fractions of pennies are millions of dollars to the big food industry.
Wow. It's just amazing.
But you know how we could change that? The most powerful thing in the world is
stop
sitting in your pocket. It's called your credit card. It's called your money. And when you hold it back and you say, you are not going to get this from me because you are not meeting my standards. And so until they do meet those standards, then mm-hmm. you don't spend that money. And then we change the world. That's why there's more organic available now. That's why you have Swanson saying we have 36 dinners without preservatives or additives or colorings or flavorings. We are demanding better, and so they are providing better, but we must continue and we must emphasize quality in every purchasing decision, because somewhere there's a guy counting, and if he sees that more sugar frosted flakes are sold than Wheaties, then he says, we have 10 machines making sugar frosted flakes, we have 10 machines making Wheaties, let's make 15 machines make sugar frosted flakes and 5 machines make Wheaties.
Right.
You see, because when you go into the store and you buy sugar frosted flakes, you're demanding that they convert one of those machines.
Right, and
when you
go in, demand drives the supply.
Exactly. Supply and demand.
Right. Okay, so I think these things compound each other, because I know someone, for example, who has a child who has ADD, a very bright little boy, but doesn't sit in class and disrupts the class and is always at odds with the teacher. And so they've taken him to counseling and one thing and another. They can't, or at least they don't feel they can change his diet because he's allergic to just about everything. I mean, the list of things he's allergic to that he's supposed to avoid is as long as your arm. And, you know, his mother came crying to me one time and she says, what am I supposed to feed my child? So it really is a catch-22. And now that little boy is on medication. He's in, what, fourth or fifth grade? And I fear for him because these medications have very severe dangers of their own.
I agree completely. And the reason why my company exists is for those people. I am the only company in the world for the last almost 20 years that makes all of our products without binders, fillers, excipients, preservatives, additives, coloring agents, flowing agents, genetically modified organisms, irradiated ingredients, pasteurized ingredients, homogenized ingredients. We are the purest food available. And the reason why is for people who are allergic to everything. And this is why, if you look at the food pyramid and you go, I need fats, good fats. Well, I've got 2 to 3 amazing sources of good fats: virgin organic coconut oil, whole ground flax seeds, spirulina. Those are the 3 foods with the healthiest fats. If you look at protein, we have a non-soy, pure vegetarian protein that's in the physician's desk reference with 36 clinical studies. We have, you know, whether it be protein, fat, carbohydrates, vegetables, fruits, we have gone around the world and found the purest, most potent forms and make them available to people who are and need to be extremely picky, who need to be extremely diligent, and that is our audience. Those are the people that we serve.
That's great. So tell me a little bit about lupus.
Well, lupus, the best thing I could do is give some advice about lupus. Lupus is, if you have lupus, and again, I have a lupus battle plan. I give a lot of background information. But
right.
with lupus, you've got to avoid certain things. And
let's start with what is lupus anyway.
Okay, well, lupus is
an autoimmune disease?
It is an autoimmune disease, but it's a very unique autoimmune disease because your body, literally attacks itself. It literally begins to see itself almost as food. Your immune system sees your internal organs, your connective tissue, as being foreign. And so,
yeah, because the body has a mechanism for determining what is local, what is me, and then what is foreign. So like when you get a splinter, it surrounds it, begins to fester it to move it out of your body. But if it sees your connective tissue, for example, as foreign and tries to get rid of that, this is not a good scene.
I agree. And what happens is with lupus is you have to be very careful about what you eat. When you eat meat, for example, for lupus, if you have lupus, there's a very good chance you should be vegetarian. If you have lupus, you shouldn't be exercising a lot. You shouldn't sweat. You should do everything you do in very limited amounts so as not to raise your body temperature, because that triggers types of stress, driving in heavy traffic or dealing with a busy environment and a crazy schedule. This should be minimized because those types of stresses also can trigger that. The consumption of high amounts of fruits and vegetables and also good quality fats is important for lupus. But probably the thing that the most amazing research I have seen on lupus, and again, I have a lupus battle plan I'd like people to reference, but black walnut extract, okay? Walnut extract. I don't sell it. It comes in tincture form. It's available in almost every health food store. Black walnut extract has been shown to destroy the lupus virus destroy the lupus virus. Nothing has ever been shown to do that before.
Huh.
And again, I don't sell this, so this isn't
right.
a self-serving thing.
Right.
I have a lupus battle plan, which I think is fantastic. And in it, I recommend as an adjunct to, you know, obviously add black walnut tincture.
Right, right. And what is the particular aspect that one is doing? It just is the right thing to neutralize the activity of the lupus virus?
Exactly.
It is a virus then?
There's 3 or 4 different theories, but the viral theory is obviously, is obviously the strongest. I've had really good results of people who, like, remember that, you know, lupus could go into remission for, like multiple sclerosis for your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the beautiful thing.
That would be a very good thing.
Yeah, I mean, and why not? It's so funny. My friend Bob died of cancer. He was 96. And people are like, I can't believe it. You know, I thought Bob ate right. I thought Bob did everything right. I can't believe he died of cancer. I'm like, what is wrong with you people? He's had that cancer since he was 50. They told him he had a year to live, and he died almost twice as long later. What are you talking about? He died of cancer. He just died, man.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to break it to you, but none of us is getting out of here alive.
Yes, exactly.
Life is terminal, but, you know, I think 96 is very good mileage.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he lived with that lump on his throat. And, you know, everybody looking at him and thinking, gosh, you know, this man's already dead, but he outlived them all.
Goodness.
And so, yeah, the thing is that we could live with our diseases, man. And I don't mean chronic diseases. I don't mean people, you know, like being hooked up to machines and reliant upon medications and unable to move.
Right.
I'm talking about being alive.
Right, having some quality of life.
Exactly.
We're talking with David Sandoval about strategies for health. Stay with us now, and we'll be right back after this message.
This is Keith Richards, a.k.a. Just Saying. Is there cancer in your family? There is in mine. But it doesn't have to be bad. We can take action to protect ourselves. I've learned how to get screened and manage my health so that I'll live a long, healthy life. How about you? Visit www.powerfulpatient.org. Again, that's www.powerfulpatient.org. Peace.
We're back now speaking with David Sandoval, and this time we're going to talk a little bit about Alzheimer's and dementia.
Now, what about, while we're on the topic of brain disrupting your brain flow, what about all this dementia that's now epidemic amongst older people? What do you attribute that to?
Well, there's a couple of things. Let's say that you have a well, and every day you walk to the well, and every day you walk the straightest path, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you wear that path. I mean, nothing's ever going to grow on that path, right?
Right.
Well, what happens with dementia is we wear, you know, 100 paths in our brain, and that's it, and nothing ever grows there again. And what we need to do to fight dementia is we need to stimulate ourselves. As we grow older, we lose 100,000 brain cells a day if we're not learning after the age of 40.
Hmm.
Okay, if we're not learning. However, if you're learning, you can continue to invigorate and grow brain cells. It's been proven. You never have to stop. I mean, I bet John Wooden is still growing brain cells, you know what I mean, in some way, because certain people, you know, they're in their 90s, and yet they're continuing to learn, and they're continuing to teach. And so let's say that you study a foreign language. Let's say you do crossword puzzles. Let's say that you take a different way when you drive places so your brain is stimulated. Take trips where you have to, you know, follow a map. Anything you could do to stimulate your brain is extremely important to fight dementia. And, of course, on the cover of Reader's Digest a few years back, about 6 years or 7 years ago, there was a headline, cover of Reader's Digest, Dr. Bruce Ames discovers the end to aging, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what he discovered the end to aging was in the brain, and he put together a combination of things that cleaned up the neuroreceptor sites so that your brain could efficiently, you know, do things like remember things and be stimulated and have, you know, and get excited and all of that, right? Well, he said first he practiced his formula on rats, and he said that rats that were near death literally looked like they were reborn again. Then he tried it on humans, and he said the results were equally as impressive. He said he had people in their 90s doing the Macarena, so that sort of tells you how long ago he did the study.
Right.
But the bottom line is that I called him, and I said, hey, I noticed that your formula isn't that potent. And he said, well, I need people to be able to afford it. I said, what if I doubled the potency, added a full dose of superoxide dismutase, the master antioxidant enzyme, and a full dose of clinically proven glycidin, ginkgo biloba? And he's all like, oh, my God, that'd be fantastic. Would you send me some? And so he gave me permission to sort of spin off of the formula that his research showed the end to aging, right? Well, I think I took the end to aging and doubled or tripled the potency. We call it Revivitol. And when that is used by people with dementia, within one day, a few hours of taking it, they're a new person. It's amazing. And I'm not talking about late stages. I'm talking about, you know, people who are starting to be forgetful, people who are starting to, you know, trip over their feet and stuff like that.
So it's not a cure, but it might help to ward off the worst of dementia.
Exactly. As the Chinese say, prevention is cure.
Right. Yeah. But hopefully you never get to the depths of dementia.
Correct. But I do have the Alzheimer's battle plan as well available on the website.
Great. Yeah, so much is in the foods that we eat. And as you say, if we can stay away from these key additives that are sneaking into everything, that we can hopefully do better. You mentioned, too, about pasteurization. Tell me about pasteurization, because I've always thought of pasteurization as a good thing. So, because, after all, before Pasteur, there were a lot of diseases that were carried by milk that went bad.
Let's not worry about pasteurization. Let's worry about homogenization. That's what really worries me.
Really?
Pasteurization is a safety measure, for sure. You know, it stops the potential proliferation of E. coli, of Staphylococcus aureus, of all types of other bacteria that we would rather not be in our food, yeast and mold as well.
Right.
However, what we got to worry about, okay, let's say that you drank whole milk, right?
Right.
Now, isn't whole milk loaded with fat?
Yeah.
Now, didn't our grandmothers drink milk right from the cows with whole milk, right?
Well, yeah, right.
For the most part, right? Now, were they fat?
Take the coffee milk off the top, you know, the cream that rose to the top, and then drink the rest, which was probably about 2%.
Well, I think not in my family, we just shook that bottle and drank it.
Okay.
You know, we didn't take anything
right,
off the coffee.
Right, but it didn't necessarily make you fat.
No, and do you know the reason why?
Why?
Because that fat molecule is so large that it cannot pass through the membrane of our intestines. Yeah, so if we drink whole milk that hasn't been homogenized, and homogenization is the process where milk fat is broken down so small, less than 1 micron, so that it floats in the milk and
doesn't float to the top.
Doesn't float to the top and make it look like it went sour.
Oh, okay.
And so homogenization is way worse than pasteurization. And so this is why I always recommend goat's milk as well, because it's not homogenized. It is pasteurized oftentimes, although I'd prefer you got it raw, but it's not homogenized. And that's a very important aspect of milk quality.
Right, and if you do get raw milk, you have to be very, very careful about the handling of it from the cow to you.
You have to have a good, credible source.
Right, you have to have a good, credible source. And you have to consume it within a short period of time, too, because it's not going to have the shelf life.
It doesn't have nearly as long a shelf life, correct. And again, there's your money talking.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But anyway, and I've been amazed to see, you know, now that I'm reading labels on everything, even the things I didn't think I had to read the labels on, I got some coffee milk the other day. What was it? Fat-free half and half. I'm sorry. That's what it was. So I got this fat-free half and half at the grocery store, thinking this would be a good thing for the office. I get in there, and I read the label as I was putting it into the refrigerator, and it has high fructose corn syrup in it.
Oh, my Lord.
I almost dropped it on the floor. Could not believe that they would put high fructose corn syrup into something that says this is half and half.
Yeah, they didn't tell you that the half was sugar, huh?
No. Not a good thing. So we have to read labels on everything these days.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're adding these additives and preservatives to absolutely everything.
Exactly. Now, a lot of people might be saying, you know, but Dave, I work with my doctor, and I can't go in and tell my doctor these things. Well, I've got a call called How to Talk to Your Doctor About Nutrition. And I have trained people for years to turn your doctor into a true ally and to educate the doctor, not in a condescending way. And it goes something like this. You say, hey, doctor, you know that medication you gave me? Well, my wife was reading the side effects, and she's just scared to death. And she just told me, she says, you know, you got to talk to the doctor about this. And so what we were thinking is I heard that by doing some exercise and changing my diet that I might be able to actually, you know, do part of this myself without the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, if I don't take this medicine for a month, am I going to die, or would you be okay with me if I added some light exercise and changed my diet, ate a lot better, and then I came back and you told me, you know, how I was doing. And most doctors are going to be, I'm so proud of you, that's great.
Yeah, because most doctors assume that you're not going to really do that.
Doctors are trained that you won't do that, so they got to give you medicine.
Right.
And if you
right.
tell them you're willing to do that, I guarantee you they're not going to turn you back.
Interesting.
And if they do, you need a new doctor.
This is true. Yes, and there's a time and a place to part company with your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Dave, thank you so much. Really appreciate you're taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be with you. And again, I encourage people, because education is key. I am not a doctor, but I work with some of the most amazing doctors in the world. And so, you know, I think that you should definitely be your own best, your own best caretaker. And the only way to do that is through education. And I have a lot to share with you if you care to use it. And again, www.mypurium.com. All the information there is free. And Purium
Great.
Is spelled P-U-R-I-U-M.
Great. And we'll put that in the handout that goes with the show. And thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure. Keep up the great work.
Thanks. Thank you, David.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
It's been a pleasure to speak with David Sandoval, and I don't know about you, but I gained some interesting insights into what's happened to our food supply and why, even with all the beautiful-looking vegetables in the markets, it's really not as good for us as the uglier-looking tomatoes. What do they call them? The heritage tomatoes, I think, or the heirloom tomatoes, the old-fashioned kind of tomatoes, are actually much more delectable and better for you. So don't be too concerned with the look of the vegetable. Be more concerned about how it was raised, whether or not it's been genetically modified, and how good it's going to be for you, and how tasty, frankly, it's also going to be. And be sure, as David said, to read all those labels, everything, whether you think you need to read the label or not, read the labels, because they're putting things into all manner of foods that you wouldn't expect them to put in. High fructose corn syrup, or what did I find the other day? Corn syrup solids, which is a powdered form of high fructose corn syrup. And what he called sugar stacking. On the ingredients list, the one that's supposed to come first is the one that's in largest quantity. And in order not to put sugar first, they sometimes will put sugar and high fructose corn syrup and honey. So there may be two or three different sugars in the same product. They just broke it up so that it wouldn't be number one. So watch for that kind of game playing. And monosodium glutamate, or MSG, can also be called, quote, natural flavoring or flavor enhancer. Hydrogenated oils are also something to watch out for, and he says any artificial coloring is not a good thing. Look, too, for preservatives, for added soy, or for added gluten, all of which can provoke allergies. So thank you very much for being with us today. And next week, we're going to talk with Beverly about her blog and her motivations for starting her blog, what she has found that it's done to help her and her family through her son's illness. And it's a very interesting discussion. So I hope you'll join us then, and we'll talk with Beverly about her blog. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time on The Powerful Patient.